sporty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
I think anyone can win the Indy 500 of the 33 drivers because it's an unpredictable race and anything has to come into your way to win that race. It's not a plan that you can think in advance, you know. You need to keep improvising. But I go there with an open mind, knowing that, you know, the race is going to be difficult. I will lack experience in some of the moments, crucial moments of the race, but I want to live the moment. I want to live that experience that I'm sure it will be very unique.
That Spanish driver Fernando Alonso looking forward to the very unique experience of competing in his first Indianapolis 500 auto race. Sunday's event, billed as the greatest spectacle in racing, will be held for the 101st time at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in Indiana. The 35-year-old Alonso will be the first active Formula One World Champion driver to contest the race for several decades. The Spaniard won back-to-back Formula One World titles in 2005 and 2006. Alonso comments on his lack of experience in IndyCar racing.
You know, with no experience, for me, it's a line that you're not sure sometimes where you are in that line. You know, if you are over the limits of the car or over the limits of running in traffic, because you never experienced something like that before. So you are just guessing what the car will do or what you are doing. But so far has been good. I did, I think, we checked today, 500 laps so far in this week. The race is 200 laps, so I did like two races and a half already. So I think I read now more or less the car is doing now and what I should do.
Fernando Alonso's car is number 29 with the McLaren Honda Andretti team, and it will start on Sunday from the second row in fifth position. Alonso says he's thrilled to test his driving skills in such a great race.
Indy 500, Monaco, and 24-hour Le Mans, that are legendary races and will be always on top of motorsport. So these three big things, you know, is what any racing driver should experience at least once in their career. And I'm, you know, I feel very privileged to be this year here. On Sunday, when the race time arrives, 300,000 people, 400,000 people in a sport event is something that has no comparison to any other sport event in the world. So even the Olympic Games or the Super Bowl cannot put 400,000 people in one place on one Sunday. So this is a very unique event.
Fernando Alonso will try to become the 11th rookie driver to win the Indianapolis 500. Alexander Rossi of the USA is back to defend his title after winning the Indy 500 last year as a rookie. Turning to athletics, the Prefontaine Classic meet gets underway later Friday night in the northwestern U.S. city of Eugene, Oregon. The IAAF Diamond League meet features a glittering field of Olympic and world champions. Joining us now by telephone from Eugene is the Pre-Classics Meet Director, Tom Jordan. Tom, welcome to the sunny side of sports.
My pleasure.
Tom, before we went on air, you mentioned how you've been with the Prefontaine Classic for more than three decades. Can you talk about the history of the Prefontaine Classic?
Well, I wasn't the meet director when it started, I will say that. It started in 1975. Just after the death of Steve Prefontaine, and the Oregon Track Club, which was all prepared to name a meet after Bill Bowerman, the legendary coach at the University of Oregon, decided unanimously with Bill's blessing that they would name it the Prefontaine Classic instead.
The Prefontaine Classic, named after the great American runner Steve Prefontaine, who died May 30th, 1975, in an automobile accident, only 24 years of age. What are some of your main memories of Steve Prefontaine?
Well, when I met Steve, I was working for Track and Field News magazine, so I was a semi-enemy being part of the media, because as we become used to, celebrities will say I was misquoted or I didn't say that or whatever. With Steve, though, if you engaged him one-on-one and got him talking, he was very forthright, very honest, and he would just speak his mind.
And he was kind of a local prodigy there in Eugene?
He was. He grew up in Coos Bay, which is a small a fishing town, well, a city, I should say. The people in Coos Bay will get on me if I call him a town. And, you know, it was it's a very working class city, and he came from working class roots, and I think that's where he got some of his toughness. Then he went to college at the University of Oregon, which is 2 hours by car from Coos Bay. So, of course, all the locals adopted him as one of their own.
Tom, I know you're getting ready for the 2017 Prefontaine Classic. The action gets underway Friday.
Voice of America!
Tell our Voice of America listeners what's on the schedule for Friday.
Well, Friday night is Joan Benoit Samuelson night. We're honoring Joni, who's going to fly in from Maine and join us, because we want to focus on women in track and field. We want to highlight some of their events. So Friday night will be only women's events, ranging from a high school 200 meters with the best prep sprinters in the country, all the way up to a world record attempt at 5,000 meters by Genzeba Dibaba, who holds several world records already.
In terms of female athletes, Tom, I was going over your record books. Maria Mutola, the Maputo Express, now retired, but very proud history at the Prefontaine Classic.
She had about 17 years being undefeated at any distance at the meet, and she was such an influence that we've named the Outstanding Athlete Award after her, the Maria Mutola Award. So at the end of the meet on Saturday, we will take a purely unscientific polling of the media and come up with the winner of the Maria Mutola Award.
On Saturday, many of the marquee athletes will be showing off their skills, so to speak. Can you run down a few of those athletes for us, Tom?
Yeah, for sure. One of the races I'm really looking forward to is the women's 1500 meters. It features the two best Americans. It's Jenny Simpson, who won the bronze medal at Rio last year, the first American woman to do so, and Shannon Roberry, who's the American record holder at 5,000 meters. But they're going to have their hands full, and probably will not either one of them win the race, because in the race we have the Olympic gold medalist from Kenya, Faith Kipyegon, and the former meet record holder from Kenya, Helen Obiri. So I'm looking for an incredibly good race, probably under 4 minutes, and very, very competitive.
And speaking of competition, the men's 100-meter dash also looks like a great field, Tom.
Yeah, we have the silver and bronze medalists from Rio, Justin Gatlin and Andre DeGrasse. We have some new up-and-coming young athletes who are probably the next generation of great sprinters. And, you know, the 100 meters for both men and women routinely is rated as the most popular event in track and field. So we're looking forward to seeing that matchup.
Tom, your competition being held in a World Championships year later this year in London will be the IAAF World Championships. Can you talk about the importance of the Prefontaine Classic, not just ahead of London, but also ahead of Eugene staging the 2021 World Championships?
Well, it's absolutely huge, Sonny, because, for example, in our 5,000 meters for men on Saturday, there are the best athletes in the world, headed by Mo Farah, who's, of course, the biggest name in distance running in the world. But there are several countries like Ethiopia where they select their world championships team based on time. So it's not so much who you've beaten, but how fast you've run. So the Ethiopians that are in that 5,000 meters are very motivated to record a fast time.
Tom, this meet is now designated as an IAAF Diamond League meet. How has that label increased the prestige of the competition?
It's been significant, no question. We've always been one of the best meets in the world, but now there's kind of a quantifying factor to it. There's actually rankings of the meets, and for the last 6 years, the Prefontaine Classic has been ranked either number one or number two in the world, and we're very proud of that. And in addition, what it does is give a focus to the sport. The Diamond League meets are the 14 best meets in the world, and we're proud to be one of them.
Eugene, nicknamed Tracktown USA for its avid support of athletics. Tom, how would you describe the fans who will be at Hayward Field this weekend?
Well, I'm definitely prejudiced, but I think our fans are the most knowledgeable in the world. I mean, they know good performances, and they're not just homers. It's not that they're going to be rooting only for people that have Oregon connections. When they see something exceptional, they appreciate it, and they let the athletes know. So I think if you talk to any athletes on the circuit, Eugene is one of their favorite places to compete.
Well, Tom, we wish you good luck with the 2017 Prefontaine Classic, and thank you for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure, Sonny.
That's Tom Jordan, the meet director of the Prefontaine Classic track and field meet in Eugene, Oregon. And Tom was speaking with us from Eugene.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Basketball star LeBron James of the Cleveland Cavaliers has broken Michael Jordan's all-time scoring record for the NBA playoffs. LeBron scored 35 points Thursday night as the defending champion Cavaliers beat the host Boston Celtics 135-102 to advance to the NBA Finals for a third year in a row. The Cavaliers won the best of seven Eastern Conference Finals 4-1. LeBron now has a career postseason total of 5,995 points, 7 points more than Michael Jordan. At the postgame news conference, LeBron reminded reporters that the number 23 on his uniform is in tribute to Michael Jordan.
First of all, you know, I wear the number because of Mike. I think I fell in love with the game because of Mike, just seeing what he was able to accomplish. But I felt like Mike was so, you know, when you're growing up and you're seeing Michael Jordan, it's almost like a god. So I didn't never believe I could be Mike. So I started to focus myself on other players and other people around my neighborhood because I never thought that you could get to a point where Mike was. So I think that helped shape my game. I think the biggest thing for me sitting here today after breaking the all-time scoring record in playoff history is that I did it just being me. I don't have to score the ball to make an impact in a basketball game. And that was my mindset. You know, when I started playing the game, I was like, if I'm not scoring the ball, how can I still make an impact on the game? It's carried me all the way to this point now, and it's going to carry me for the rest of my career because scoring is not number one on my agenda.
One thing on LeBron's agenda is another trip to the NBA Finals and another meeting with the Golden State Warriors. This marks an unprecedented third consecutive NBA Finals between the same teams. The Warriors beat the Cavaliers 4-2 in the 2015 NBA Finals, but the Cavaliers came back to beat the Warriors 4-3 in the 2016 NBA Finals, rallying from a 3-1 deficit. The 2017 NBA Finals tip off June 1st in Oakland, California, and both the Cavaliers and the Warriors appear to be at full strength going into the championship series.
Music. Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. England, Argentina, Germany, and Venezuela scored victories Friday at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup football tournament in South Korea. England wrapped up group play with a 1-0 victory over host South Korea in Suwon. Everton midfielder Kieran Dowell had the goal for England in the 56th minute. Both England, which topped the Group A table with 7 points, and South Korea with 6 points, go through to the knockout round of 16. Argentina, winners of a record 6 under-20 world titles, will wait and see if it goes through as one of the best third-place finishers after thrashing Guinea 5-0. Turning to Group B, Germany defeated Vanuatu 3-2, and Venezuela edged Mexico 1-0. Venezuela and Mexico, with 9 and 4 points respectively, advanced to the knockout round of 16. The Germans also had 4 points, but had a worse goal differential than the Mexicans. Germany, like Argentina, can still go through to the knockout stage as one of the best third-place finishers. And let me give a quick sunny side of sports shout-out for Sergio Cordoba, Venezuela's goal scorer on Friday. Sergio now has 4 goals in the tournament, and he's the leading scorer at South Korea 2017. In Espanol, Andrew, I think we would say muy bien for Sergio Cordoba. How are you this evening, Andrew?
That's about all the Spanish that I know, so I'm good with that. I can follow along with that, and that's about it. But good to be here, as always.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this happy Friday?
Well, we heard from LeBron James earlier in the program, and he is, of course, trending as his Cleveland Cavaliers make their way back to yet another NBA final. In fact, the third year in a row that we will see the Cleveland Cavaliers take on the Golden State Warriors. Fans saying it's getting a little bit repetitive, but they're seeing the making of a dynasty, and some fans are already talking about the documentary or the movie that they're going to make down the road about this great storied NBA rivalry. But LeBron doing a big part to lead his team to the finals, as you mentioned, not only passing Michael Jordan in postseason scoring, but his 7th straight NBA Finals, 4 with the Miami Heat.
What a record!
It's pretty amazing, and making quite a case for a term that I know you love: his goatness, greatest of all time. People, of course, making that case now after this, passing this latest record. I loved, there was one post on social media. Somebody said that it would say young LeBron James shaking hands with a fan. And it's a picture of LeBron meeting Michael Jordan and shaking his hand. So for his part, LeBron in that post-game press conference said he did everything when he was growing up to emulate Jordan, but got everybody with this line. Everybody loves this line. I didn't go bald like Mike, but I'm getting there. So everybody's tweeting about that line, talking about LeBron mentioning that. But some very nice moments on the court from LeBron, but also some nice moments off the court. And we saw a couple of those last night, one from that press conference. The other was a nice moment at the end of the game where he embraces Boston's Isaiah Thomas, and they have a nice hug and they share some kind words. Isaiah Thomas, as we mentioned, his sister was killed in an automobile accident earlier this year. So lots of fans saying great respect between those two, and what class that both of those players showed, LeBron and Isaiah Thomas. And many people on social media noting that with a minute left in the game and the Celtics down 30, the Boston fans were still cheering, "Let's go Celtics." So they said that is inspiring sports loyalty. When you know your team's not going to win, you're going to get knocked out. You're still cheering them on. That's what any team would aspire to in its fan base. So a lot of people really cheering on Boston for that, even though they weren't victorious.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What else is trending in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, as we've talked about, we have the NBA Finals going on, and we have the National Hockey League Finals going on at the same time, and we now have the Stanley Cup Final set in the National Hockey League after the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Ottawa Senators last night 3-2 in a thrilling double overtime victory. I think a lot of hockey fans, regardless of whether or not you're a fan of these teams, you were on your edge of your seat watching this because it was such an exciting game, double overtime. Pittsburgh going back to the Stanley Cup, they won it last year, so they're looking to repeat, and actually won it also in 2009. So pretty recent good success for the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's why a lot of fans, I think, are hoping the Nashville Predators will win. They have not won a Stanley Cup ever, so definitely a little bit of David versus Goliath in the Stanley Cup matchup. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, fun fact, are the first team to make back-to-back Stanley Cup final appearances since the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2008 and 2009. So a little bit of, as we said, a David versus Goliath, but fans of both Nashville and Pittsburgh very excited to see their teams in the Stanley Cup final when that puck drops later on next week. So we'll see how
and
that turns
it
out.
It has me wondering, Andrew, what is the natural predator of the penguin?
I think they get gobbled up maybe by polar bears or seals or something like that. But if I recall correctly, the Nashville Predators, they have kind of like, it looks like maybe a saber-tooth a tiger, I believe, or something like that, some kind of predator. So I'm something that could probably take on a penguin pretty easily. But we'll see if they can do that on the ice when they kick that off.
And ice hockey fans here in Washington would say the Penguins have been the predator of the Washington Capitals in the playoffs.
That they have. The Capitals have not had good luck against those Penguins, so we'll see.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, a really great tennis story. 6 months after having her hand severely cut in a home invasion and not knowing if she was ever going to be able to play tennis again, two-time Wimbledon champion Petra Kvitova is making her return on the red clay of Roland Garros at the French Open. She held a press conference and announced that she is back. She's there in Paris practicing. She put up an Instagram post that said, "Hey guys, guess what? I'm going to Paris." And she's standing at the gate at the airport pointing at the screen that says, "Paris, Charles de Gaulle." She's also said at that press conference one quote that's getting a lot of attention on social media: "I've already won my biggest fight." Again, referencing the fact that at scary home invasion, she didn't know her hand was badly injured, badly cut up, did not know if she was going to be able to play tennis again, let alone come back this quickly. This is a lot quicker than they anticipated her coming back from this injury, so it's really great. So we're seeing some great photos, even before she has her first match there at Roland Garros, some great photos of her practicing, sporting just a huge smile, ear-to-ear beaming, and lots of fans saying she deserves to smile, and they're glad to see that smile back on the court. A lot of fellow tennis players, too, saying the same thing. We saw a few pictures. Lucy Safarova, a fellow Czech tennis player, came over and hugged her, and they were chatting and catching up. So the players are excited to have her back. And I think Petra Kvitova is excited to be back because as we talked about, Serena Williams is out, Maria Sharapova is out, Victoria Azarenka is out. So it's really opened up the women's field. So people are saying they hope she can go all the way. She hasn't had great success on the clay in the past, but maybe this is something that has inspired her to do well. Just being back in the game and being able to play again, maybe she'll make a deep run at Roland Garros. I know a lot of fans on social media are pulling for her as a big favorite.
One of the big tennis comeback stories of 2017, Petra Kvitova.
Absolutely, and especially at Wimbledon, we got to watch her because she's won it twice before, so she could do well there.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Have a nice weekend, Andrew.
Thank you, you too.
And that wraps up the May 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Bill Andrade. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 22nd, a suicide bomber walked into a group of exiting concertgoers in Manchester, England, and blew himself up, killing 22 and injuring 64. Many victims were under the age of 16. The perpetrator was identified as Salman Ebedi, the son of Libyan refugees. Police have detained numerous men in connection with the attack, including Abedi's 23-year-old brother in Tripoli. The Greater Manchester Police are reporting that a woman was also arrested. British Prime Minister Theresa May raised the United Kingdom's terror threat up to its highest level of critical, meaning more attacks may be imminent. President Donald Trump expressed, on behalf of the people of the United States, his deepest condolences to those so terribly injured in this terrorist attack and to the families of the victims. "We stand in absolute solidarity with the people of the United Kingdom," he said.
"So many young, beautiful, innocent people living and enjoying their lives murdered by evil losers in life. I won't call them monsters, because they would like that term. They would think it's a great name. I will call them, from now on, losers, because that's what they are. They're losers."
This kind of terrorism that snuffs out the lives of innocent people in the most barbaric manner is what President Trump has been rallying countries to fight against. "Our society," he said, "can have no tolerance for this continuation of bloodshed. We cannot stand a moment longer for the slaughter of innocent people." And in this attack, it was mostly children. The terrorists and extremists and those who give them aid and comfort must be driven out from our society forever, said President Trump. "This wicked ideology must be obliterated, and I mean completely obliterated. An innocent life must be protected. All civilized nations," said President Trump, "must join together to protect human life and the sacred right of our citizens to live in safety and in peace."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This week, we're taking a musical journey into African classics. Who are they? What songs, what voices bring back sweet memories of the past? Playlist is amazing, guaranteed to stir your emotions. And some of your own suggestions from Facebook Live are included too. So join me this Sunday and the following Saturday and reconnect with the classics. It's Music Time in Africa, 15 and 2000 UTC.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at the life and journey of Mzee Boniface Byanyima, arguably one of Africa's most unique and remarkable teachers. The political icon died on May 16th at age 97. A discussion on Uganda's political giant. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.